Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Our mission today, well, it's pretty laser-focused. We are diving deep into Kenya's private wealth landscape for 2025. Mm-hmm. We've synthesized a whole stack of sources, the Knight Frank Wealth Report, those crucial insights from the Nairobi Private Wealth Conference, current market shifts, really trying to give you the absolute shortest route to understanding where private capital is truly flowing.
Right. And because these reports, you know, they rely on pretty precise terminology, let's quickly define the players we're talking about here.
Good idea.
When we talk about high net worth individuals, or HNWIs, we mean anyone with a net worth of US $1 million or more. Simple enough.
Okay.
And then for the ultra high net worth individuals, UHNWIs, the bar is significantly higher, US $30 million plus.
Got it. So the key message we pulled from all this material, it seems to be that the Kenyan wealth profile is undergoing what we're calling a, well, a strategic recalibration.
That's a good way to put it.
It feels like a foundational change, doesn't it? Moving away from relying so much on traditional tangible assets like land.
Yeah, driven by this chase for higher liquidity and, importantly, competitive returns.
And all this is happening while the whole wealth structure seems to be maturing, facing these complex generational and governance issues.
Exactly. It's not just a simple change in allocation. It's almost a change in philosophy, I think.
Okay.
And to really understand this, we probably need to first look at the current market context. Like, who are the wealth managers actually serving right now?
Right. Set the scene.
The survey data shows that the majority, about 33%, they handle somewhere between 51 and 100 clients. But the really interesting story, I think, lies in the size of those portfolios.
Okay. So what does the data tell us there about the sort of base of the wealth pyramid?
Well, it tells us the base is actively growing upwards, which is fascinating. A significant chunk, 28% of wealth managers, reported overseeing portfolios valued at less than US $5 million.
Okay, less than 5 million.
And this is crucial because it really highlights the predominance of these emerging affluent clients, you know, people whose wealth is being accumulated right now.
Ah, so not just inherited.
Exactly. Through things like entrepreneurship, technology, service sectors, it's not just passed down wealth. We're actually seeing real-time wealth creation happening.
So we've got this robust, broadening base. But then at the very, very top, the UHNWI segment, portfolios over $1 billion. Still pretty scarce, right? Only 6% reported those.
Yeah, very scarce. It's definitely a concentrated group at the peak, but with this constantly expanding middle segment driving a lot of the activity.
Okay. Now, looking back just recently, the growth in the actual number of HNWIs between 2024 and 2025, it was quite modest, wasn't it? Less than 10%.
It was modest. And we need to connect the dots for you, the listener, that moderation didn't just happen in a vacuum. There were reasons.
Exactly. What specific economic factors were, you know, putting the brakes on, preventing that kind of explosive growth we might have seen in previous cycles?
Well, primarily, it was a deceleration in economic expansion. We saw GDP growth moderate down to 4.0% in the third quarter of 2024. That's down from 6.0% in 2023.
Okay, quite a drop.
And critically, the traditional engines of wealth creation were stalling out a bit. Construction actually contracted by 2.0%.
Wow.
And mining and quarrying fell even sharper, down 11.1%. When those key sectors tighten up, wealth creation inevitably slows down.
And then you layer on top of that the fiscal and, frankly, political pressures. The sources really emphasize the impact of those widespread anti-government protests over the proposed tax hikes.
Mm-hmm, the cash. Right. $346 billion figure that was eventually scrapped.
Right, that level of uncertainty. Well, it's kryptonite for major investor confidence in any kind of long-term planning, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yet, despite all those headwinds, the outlook is, well, remarkably stable, actually.
How so?
When wealth managers were asked about 2025, 48% expected only a marginal increase. So that reflects the cautious sentiment.
Okay.
But here's the confidence indicator. None of them foresee a significant decline in wealth next year. 0%.
Ah, interesting. So cautious, but not pessimistic.
Precisely. And that stable, cautious outlook, it's kind of reinforced by the government's own projections, too. The Kenyan Treasury is projecting growth around 5.3% for 2025-26.
So the foundation seems sound, but perhaps the era of easy double-digit growth is paused for now.
Keeps that way.
And that brings us neatly to what I thought was the most staggering finding in this whole report.
Yeah, this is where that recalibration idea really hits home.
There's one figure here that just leaps off the page. It concerns the historic backbone of Kenyan wealth, residential property. Mm-hmm. The reports indicate that the allocation of client wealth to primary or secondary homes has, Well, it's plummeted from a typical, what, 50-60% range in 2024?
Yeah, that was norm.
Down to just 22%? I mean, that is a staggering plunge. What on earth is driving HNWIs to abandon what's historically been their safest, most cherished bet?
That drop really is the core of this strategic recalibration we're talking about. HNWIs are prioritizing two things now. One, higher liquidity, and two, competitive income-generating returns. Residential property, you know, despite its perceived security, it ties up capital. And frankly, right now, it often provides lower returns compared to financial assets.
So, okay, if they're pulling out of bricks and mortar, what are the preferred alternatives? Where are they pivoting to?
They're heavily favoring liquid options. We're seeing demand for real estate investment trusts, REITs.
Ah, so still real estate exposure, but liquid.
Exactly. Much greater liquidity. Also, treasury bonds, money market funds. And then for pure growth, they're targeting specific high growth sectors, tech, agriculture, renewable energy.
Interesting.
The focus now is really firmly on income generation over just simple capital preservation and land. It's a big shift.
It really is. And it makes sense then that purchase activity would be kind of subdued in this environment.
Yeah.
Only 61% of HNWIs bought a home in 2024, and only 53% plan to buy one in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
Those numbers feel, well, low for the segment.
They do feel low. And the constraints are pretty clear. Global and domestic economic uncertainty, that definitely discourages large commitments. And then you have that persistent issue of rising land and construction costs. Even where we've seen some price corrections in house prices. I think the Kenya Bankers Association reported a 14.28% year-over-year decline in some specific areas.
Right, they saw that.
But the overall construction costs are still a major limiting factor for new builds.
Okay. But despite this big portfolio shift away from owning homes, there's still an enduring kind of domestic comfort factor, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely.
Kenyan HNWIs still maintain a massive preference for domestic real estate. Less than 10% of their residential wealth is held abroad, according to the report.
Absolutely. And their ownership patterns really show that deep connection. The majority of clients own multiple residences. Get this. 39% own three homes.
Three homes.
And another 33% own two. This usually breaks down to, you know, a main city home and then a second home for leisure or retreat, maybe upcountry or at the coast.
And this is a great little nugget for anyone advising this group.
Yeah.
Those second homes. They're rarely investment vehicles, are they?
Almost never. Only 22% are actually rented out. The priority for the owners is overwhelmingly leisure, personal use, privacy. They're basically lifestyle assets, not revenue streams.
Good point to remember.
Yeah.
Okay, moving quickly to commercial property then. Is that market facing similar challenges?
It is, yeah. It's also facing maturity challenges. Investment remains pretty subdued, largely due to oversupply in the office sector specifically.
Still working through that, Colette.
Still working through it. Over 50% of wealth managers expect fewer than 10% of their clients to invest in commercial space in 2025. The approach is still quite conservative, with 39% of investors allocating less than US $5 million, even when they do invest.
Okay, so given that caution across property, let's identify where the genuine growth appetite is focused. Because HNWIs are still looking to deploy capital strategically.
Right? Oh, definitely.
What were the top emerging sectors attracting their money for 2025?
Yeah, the list is highly strategic, and it's moving away from sort of old school development. Data centers actually top the list at 21%.
Data centers, interesting.
Then we see hotel and leisure at 18%. And then there's a strong tie at 17% for development land, farmland, and again, hotel and leisure.
Okay.
Retail, logistics, industrial, and student housing kind of round out the key priorities after that.
I want to pause on farmland for a second because the motivation you highlighted was really quite astonishing. A massive 83% of respondents said their clients invest in farmland primarily for food production and food security.
Yeah. Food security, not just financial returns.
That's fascinating.
And that data point ties directly into the high prioritization of ESG environmental social governance in these strategic investments.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
For farmland specifically, 56% prioritize tree planting, like agroforestry, and 50% cite lifestyle and broader environmental benefits as key drivers. ESG isn't just a checkbox anymore. It's a fundamental investment filter for many.
Right. It's becoming mainstream. That focus on security in the future, it naturally brings up the whole global strategy question.
Yeah.
How are Kenyan HNWIs approaching global diversification? Are they, you know, rushing for second citizenships, trying to leave?
Well, surprisingly, no. The data suggests not really. Less than 10% plan to apply for second citizenship in 2025.
Okay.
Which actually reflects, I think, a high level of strong domestic confidence. However, and this is important, the sources make it very clear that global diversification of assets is now considered pretty essential.
So not fleeing, but spreading the risk.
Exactly. Separating financial risk across multiple jurisdictions. That's the goal.
Okay, so they're staying put mostly, but they're spreading their wealth. Where are they buying internationally when they do?
Well, for home purchases, Kenya still dominates completely, 66%. Wow. But the U.S. is a distant second at 29%, followed by the U.K. at 21%.
Okay.
But the choice shifts when we look at commercial investments internationally.
Where then?
The top international choice there is South Africa. Seems preferred for its mature market structure, established infrastructure.
Makes sense.
And this is followed by places like Canada, France, and Italy more for that broader portfolio diversification play.
Got it. Okay, let's turn now to the challenge of, well, complexity and longevity of the whole legacy piece. How much of today's wealth that we're seeing is actually inherited?
Inherited wealth is definitely foundational, and the majority of H&WIs seem to be building upon it. 28% of clients reported that somewhere between 30 and 40% of their total wealth came from inheritance.
Okay, so a significant chunk.
Yeah, and only 6% reported zero inherited wealth, so it's definitely a factor. And that legacy wealth, which is often in the form of property, is being actively redeployed now.
Right. And where does that inherited capital typically go when it is redeployed?
It's mainly channeled into the residential private rented sector, or PRS. That accounts for 39%.
Okay, PRS.
Yeah, reflecting that sustained demand for rental properties and maybe the traditional view of property as secure long-term. Real estate debt follows that at 17%.
Now, the Nairobi Private Wealth Conference you mentioned, it highlighted a really central governance challenge, something that needs immediate attention if this wealth is going to successfully transition across generations. What was that?
Yeah, that challenge is basically the fragmentation of family wealth governance. Historically, you've had legal, tax, accounting advice, all operating in complete silos.
Right. Everyone doing their own thing.
Exactly. The NPW conference really championed the need for an integrated, blended advisory model. You know, one central strategy. And they argued it's absolutely vital for managing generational transitions smoothly and for scaling family capital effectively over time.
And this need for more sophisticated structuring?
Yeah.
It leads to thinking about critical protective measures too, right?
Yeah.
The sources highlighted the increasing importance of legal protections, things like prenups and postnups for wealth preservation.
Mm-hmm. And also the sophisticated use of, say, offshore holding companies for strategic tax planning. For example, using specific structures to potentially eliminate capital gains tax on major asset sales. It's getting quite complex.
It sounds like it. Okay, and just quickly looping back to those investment filters, the influence of ESG. You said it's non-negotiable in property acquisition now.
Pretty much. Only 6% of investors apparently bypass an ESG assessment altogether. The top criteria are actually quite simple but impactful. 67% prioritize renewable energy adoption.
Okay.
And 61% demand energy efficiency ratings. And importantly, social consciousness is strong too. 72% consider a project's impact on the wider community.
That's quite high. Good to see. Finally, let's conclude with perhaps the most fun segment. The investments of passion.
Ah, yeah.
If you're investing so prudently elsewhere, what are Kenyan HNWIs collecting just for the sheer joy of it?
Well, art dominates the passion portfolio. 72% expressed interest there.
Big number for art.
Yeah. Followed by classic cars at 50%. And then jewelry and high-end furniture are tied at 44% each.
Okay. And the motivation here really matters, doesn't it? It's not purely financial, you're saying.
Not primarily, no. The top driver cited was actually the joy of ownership by 26%. That was slightly ahead of as an investment at 21%.
So they're buying these things mostly for pleasure first, investment second.
Seems that way. And that priority is kind of measured by financial prudence, too. Critically, less than 10% of total wealth is allocated to these luxury assets overall.
Uh-huh. Right.
So they clearly prioritize the liquid assets, the entrepreneurial ventures, over really conspicuous luxury spending. It underscores, I think, a very disciplined approach to wealth management overall.
So synthesizing this entire deep dive then, the story of Kenyan private wealth right now is really one of evolution, isn't it?
Absolutely.
The profile seems to be shifting rapidly from one maybe centered on land accumulation and pure security,
right,
to one that's prioritizing liquid, high income generating assets, all while being, you know, tempered by this macroeconomic caution and increasingly driven by this growing awareness of ESG and the need for sophisticated cross-border structuring.
Yeah, I think that sums it up well. It's clear that looking at the Knight Frank data, but combining it with those operational insights from the NPW conference, it gives you a much more comprehensive view of a market that's sort of simultaneously navigating domestic stability while embracing the absolute need for global diversification.
It certainly does paint a complex picture. So here's a final thought for you, our listener, to take away. Given that Kenyan HNWIs overwhelmingly still choose domestic real estate for that feeling of security and familiarity.
Mm-hmm, that anchor.
But they are increasingly diversifying into international markets for stability and maybe more mature financial services, like choosing South Africa for commercial property, as you mentioned. Where is the next real battleground for wealth advisors? Is it in building local expertise here in Kenya that truly rivals global sophistication? Or is the bigger challenge actually in making global diversification easier, more accessible, and more palatable for the client who still, deep down, kind of believes that home is best?
That's a great question. Something to mull over.
We'll leave you with that one. Until next time.
See you then.
See you on the next deep dive.